Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
What exactly was the benefit here? The respondent disseminated this information to a purported friend of his, to a media company that owns the local newspaper, the Pensacola News Journal, and to a law firm that is representing a former employee who is currently suing the county of Escambia County.
So to say I was disappointed in Elizabeth Miller, who was the advocate for the Ethics Commission on Friday in the hearing over the text messages and the alleged ethics violation by former county employee, the aide to Commissioner Underhill, Jonathan Owens. But yeah, a bit of an understatement. That's a long sentence. If the job of the advocate is just to present only the one side of the case, basically Burgosh's complaint, then I guess she did her job. If the job of the advocate is kind of figure out the case and sort through the evidence and present to the Ethics Commission an assessment of whether there's really an ethics violation here. I mean, she did a terrible job. There's no evidence that Jonathan Owens gave these text messages to the PNJ, and he's never claimed that, and they've never claimed that. And all the reporting I have seen is that that came to them independently. We don't know how either of them got it. Don't know from whom either of them got it. Owens didn't give it to Alex Arduini. That's the other person they mentioned there without saying him by name, because Alex doesn't even have it. And he has said he doesn't have it and never had it. That's a falsehood in the claim. And then the issue of Ramey Edler's team, we'll get to that in a second. If you're new to all of this, the short version is that, basically Jeff Burgosh locked himself out of his phone. Commissioner Jeff Burgosh locked himself out of his personal phone, on which he does, you know, personal business, personal messages, like his outside of the county business, and then also county business, of course. He went to IT. They helped him, use county resources to unlock his personal phone, to back up the information on it. And telling them don't make a copy of that. Well, somebody did, and somehow that copy got to Jonathan Owens. Somehow a copy got to the PNJ. And at this point, we don't know how. It's possible that one of the IT people did it. Theoretically, I have no idea why this would be the case, but it's possible Jeff Burgosh or an aide gave it to Jonathan Owens or the PNJ. I mean, who knows? A disgruntled aide. I mean, who knows? We really don't know. Well, in conversation, then at a hearing, a deposition, I think it was, where Jonathan was asked by the lawyers for Ramey Edler, who is the former medical director who's suing the county over a variety of things, they asked him if he knew anything else about her or the county, and he said, "Well, I do have these text messages that indicate some stuff," and they said, "Well, give those to us," which he did, and that led to then having to have a version of those made available to that trial court, which are available to the public now with some redactions. Okay, that's you're caught up on the facts now. And meanwhile, Jeff Burgosh has got the county to pursue a legal case against the PNJ, Alex Arduini, and Jonathan Owens for replevin, and now an ethics complaint against Jonathan because he was an employee at the time all of this happened. The disclosure or use of certain information statute in Florida Statutes 112.313 says, a current or former public officer, employee of an agency, or local government attorney may not disclose or use information not available to members of the general public and gained by reason of his or her official position, except for information relating exclusively to government practices, for his or her personal gain or benefit, or for the personal gain or benefit of any other person or business entity. So there's four elements there that have to happen. You have to disclose the information, and there is no evidence that he disclosed it to anybody other than to Ramey Edler, which would be a legal demand by them. Not available to members of the general public. Well, certainly the personal stuff on there was not, and certainly the like business outside of county business, like his personal business, like his side job, would not have been available. But the public interest stuff that's on there, and also the stuff under Sunshine Law, the public records is on there, could have been available. Gained by reason of his or her official position. The purpose of the statute is, like, if you're the commissioner's aide or the commissioner and you're in a meeting about a road project, for example, just an easy example, you might know which land is valuable. And then to tell a friend, hey, buy this land and I'll split the profits with you. Like, that's the kind of thing this is designed to avoid. Well, he wasn't engaged in official activities other than having an office in which from which he received this. It wasn't like he was in some meeting or privy to something as a result of him being an official. It was just that he happened to be the recipient of it and it happened to be at the county. So that's not really a fit here. And then for his or her personal gain or benefit, or for the personal gain or benefit of any other person or business or entity. Well, the Ray Adler stuff is a weird one because she's suing and it's of public interest and or a public record. And therefore, I mean, it's just open and available, or it doesn't benefit her case, in which case it wouldn't be public record, in which case it wouldn't be a problem because it doesn't benefit anybody. Same thing for personally. Their argument about personal benefit is, well, eventually he might run for office.
He also may have benefited himself because the text messages involve personal, private, privileged, and confidential communications between Commissioner Burgosh and his family members, attorneys, personal confidants, and business associates. Should respondent choose to run against Commissioner Burgosh again, he may use this information against him.
So maybe theoretically in the future, Jonathan Owens could decide to move because he was in District 1, but Jeff Burgosh redrew the district lines to draw him out of his district. Whether you think he gerrymandered or not, that's what actually happened. He drew the lines and now Jonathan is no longer a competitor in district unless he moves. So, and he hasn't actually done this yet. He hasn't filed for office. So that was the argument that Dennis Green, Jonathan's lawyer, said is, you know, he hasn't actually done something. This is speculative about a possible future benefit, and that's not what the statute says. We'll come back to the analysis of this in just a second. Jake's got traffic on the fives. Jake?
This traffic report is brought to you by Barberry Plumbing. Avalon Boulevard this morning, southbound, headed toward I-10, where I'm seeing some slowdown there, getting by there. Also, Pine Forest Road and West Detroit Boulevard here in Pensacola. We have a vehicle crash there. Not seeing any roadblock or slowdown from that accident right now. Otherwise, around town, Highway 98 through Gulf Breeze and Navarre is flowing smoothly. If you're coming out of Milton through Pace on Highway 90, not seeing anything slowing you down. And Highway 29 south through Cantonment is clear. If you see anything else out there on the roadways slowing you down, let me know about it. Call or text 437-1620. But when it's time to call a plumber, call the best of the Bay winner, Barberry Plumbing, at 477-8782. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jake. So Dennis Green is the attorney for Jonathan Owens in this hearing and in general against in the Replevin lawsuit. And he's the one that was talking to the Ethics Commission about why they shouldn't vote forward this process at the probable cause hearing.
Today, we are here to discuss probable cause against my client for this alleged offense. Probable cause is more than just a mere hunch, suspicion, you know, I think maybe, I don't know, but potentially. Probable cause requires evidence.
And the evidence is thin. I mean, at best, right?
It's not in dispute that he was a county employee when he came into possession of the cell phone data. But what is in contention, I find it very interesting, is in this report, not one single analysis was done on how he obtained the data through his official position as a commissioner's aide. He didn't work in the IT department. He wasn't entrusted with it. He was not a custodian of the documents, anything like that. He simply came to work. I don't know how they can overcome that hurdle, but certainly they're drawing a lot of conclusions here.
And remember, the key is it has to satisfy all the elements. If it fails on any one element, then the statute application to this behavior doesn't work, right?
Regarding information not available to the public, here you have a trove of data. And within that data, the information that was used by Dr. Edler's attorneys in her lawsuit are all of public importance. As a matter of fact, these documents were inspected in camera by a federal judge. The federal judge determined which pieces of evidence were going to come into that case.
Objection. Excuse me for interrupting. This is all outside the report of an investigation.
That's an objection by Miller.
In the that judge made a determination that certain parts of that cell phone data could come in to evidence. And I would also tell you that the cell phone data is also subject to public records and sunshine law.
Yeah, so you have the problem that it would be available, at least portions of it. There are portions of it that would not be available. That's the redacted out portion that has not been released publicly. But the portions that are beneficial to Rahmi Edler and her lawsuit would be publicly available. And so the argument that he's got information that wouldn't be available to the public, therefore it benefits Rahmi Edler, well, it would be available to the public. And so you can't make the case on the stuff that goes to her. So the only way you can really make this case is on the stuff that he's got. And then it's on this possibility that he might run again in the future.
Furthermore, the state would like for you to believe that they have the opportunity and the ability to be clairvoyant and determine what the future is, that he may get a benefit. It's possible. It's possible he could give it to somebody else. Well, that's not what the statute says. Statute doesn't say an intent. The statute says gained a benefit, gained, took possession of it, gained a benefit. Here, you can't sit here and say Mr. Owens gained a benefit for running in the future or maybe somebody else running against Commissioner Burgosh. So I think this whole case fails right there on that.
Yeah. Now, when I look at this case, I am neither a lawyer nor do I sit on the Ethics Commission. I do have a little bit of training in, you know, logical thinking. And when I look at this, it seems weakest on the benefit part and weakest on the gain by reason of his or her official position part. Now, the slice of it dealing with Rahmi Edler is a zero when it comes to not available to the general public, because that would be available to the general public. In fact, Commissioner Burgosh has repeatedly said that he would give anybody who offered, you know, make a public records request for that information. So you literally can't make that argument on the stuff that goes to Rahmi Edler. So how does this play out? Well, they did vote it forward unanimously for reasons that surpass my understanding, because it seems like at this point you would have said, no, this doesn't qualify. Maybe it's more of a rubber stamp, this kind of a hearing, but then why do you bother having the hearing? I think if you step back and look at it as like just a neutral observer and say, well, was it an ethics violation for him to take this information about Commissioner Burgosh and give it to anybody at all? And you can start to see, well, I don't know, it looks a little bit weird. But then when you actually read the statute and you start to analyze the pieces of it, it seems to fall apart to me. Now, do keep in mind, okay, this is, I should tell you, full disclosure, I am a good friend of Jonathan Owens. I consider him a good friend. Whether he'd say that about me, it's up to him. but I consider him a pretty good friend. But of course, my job is doing this is to always assess these things, you know, as neutrally and objectively as I can. And I just don't see it. What I see instead is a pattern of harassment by a government official who was embarrassed by the disclosure of some of his personal documents. And I see him engaging in a strategic lawsuit against public participation, the slap suit. That's the one where they're, you know, the Replevin lawsuit. And I see him engaging in this ethics complaint as a matter of harassment against somebody that, you know, he and Jonathan do not get along. I also do not get along very well with Jeff Burgosh anymore. His choice, not mine. But, you know, that's kind of where we're at. 437-1620. If you have questions, feel free to let me know. Do I have great hope about the Ethics Commission doing the right thing in the future? They've done some really what I would consider inappropriate things in the past, so I'm not sure how much faith I have in them. But, you know, this is step one, and we'll see. 723 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Here's today's Strength for Life with your host, Pastor James C. Johnson.
Jesus loves the unlovable. He loves sinners, and sinners come in all shapes and sizes. In John 3, Jesus shows love to a religious sinner named Nicodemus. Yet in John 4, he shows love to an adulterous sinner known as the Samaritan woman. Nicodemus needed to be born again even though he was religious, just as the sinful Samaritan woman who had been married 5 times and was living with a man who wasn't her husband, she also needed to be born again. The fact is, we're all sinners. When the Samaritan woman realized who Jesus was, she believed on him savingly and then told people all over town how Jesus saved her soul from the consequences of her sin. I urge you, trust Christ today to deal with your sin problem. You'll be eternally glad that you did.
That was James C. Johnson. He serves as the pastor of North Stone Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at David's Catfish House. David's Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish.
fresh Gulf seafood and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include 2 times Tuesday, 6 free shrimp added to the 6-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials and everyone's favorite Shrimp-tastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit David's Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton and New Warrington Road in Pensacola. See you at David's.
In a world of payroll and HR services, things can get complicated. There are so many moving parts in business. At Avalon HR, we understand, and we have your back. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we guide you through the complicated world of payroll and HR services. Running a business is busy work. Allow Avalon HR to work with you. Join us tomorrow on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
My name is Tasca, and I started working here 20 years ago.
I'm Diana, and it's been 12 years for me.
Hi, I'm Norma, and 20 years is my number.
I'm Sandy, and it's been 9 years for me.
And I'm Jeff, and I'm the General Sales Manager, and I'm inviting you to join our sales team here at News Radio 92.3. If you have sales experience, a desire for a career that is fun, exciting, while working with local and regional businesses, and with an uncapped income, we would like to hear from you. Send your resume to hr@newsradio1620.com. ADX Communication is an equal opportunity employer.
Start your mornings off informed with all things Pensacola on the Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Ha ha, you fool! You fell victim to one of the classic blunders. The most famous is never get involved in a land war in Asia.
Good morning, 726, News Radio 92.3, wakey wakey. Nothing like a little Blink 182 to get you up in the morning. Jake's got our traffic on the five. Jake?
Our traffic report this morning is brought to you by Executive Landscaping. If you're on Avalon Boulevard headed southbound toward I-10, seeing a little bit of slowdown this morning, Woodbine Road southbound is backed up to Oak Tree Lane. And if you're on Pine Forest Road this morning heading by West Detroit Boulevard, we do have a vehicle crash reported there, but not seeing any roadblock or slowdown from that. Otherwise, around town, we're looking great. Highway 98 through Gulf Breeze and Navarre is flowing smoothly. If you're coming out of Milton this morning through Pace on Highway 90, not seeing anything slowing you down. And Highway 29 is looking pretty good southbound through Cantonment and Inslee. Executive Landscaping, call us today for all your commercial and premium landscaping needs. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jake. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
I think I needed a few more seconds of that Blink 182.
Just one or two more? You. Okay, I understand.
Several states holding presidential nominating contests today on the path to the November general election. Voters heading to the polls in Georgia, Hawaii, Mississippi, and Washington. Haiti's prime minister has now resigned. That announcement coming late yesterday after weeks of chaos and deadly gang violence in the nation. They'll be installing a caretaker government until a new prime minister and cabinet can be named. And a new honor for Muhammad Ali. He'll apparently be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame next month.
The boxing legend made multiple appearances at pro wrestling events throughout his storied career. Most notably, he was the special guest referee for the tag team match that saw Hulk Hogan and Mr. T take on Rowdy Roddy Piper and Paul Orndorff at the first WrestleMania in 1985. I'm Trey Thomas.
And that's a pretty big deal.
Those are your people, David.
Absolutely.
Your heroes. All right. Thanks so much for the update. 729 here on News Radio 92.3. Oh, somebody texted me in and said on this Jonathan Owens thing, the real ethics violation is using county staff and time, including overtime potentially and money, for a piece of software purchased solely to recover the private information from the phone that Jeff Bergosh locked himself out of. Yeah. 729 on News Radio 92.3. There's a lot of dimensions to this story, let alone the actual content of the text. Oh, you remember the story about the boy who was the Chiefs fan that had his face in the black paint and then Deadspin ran this whole series of defamatory analysis of him and saying he was engaged in racism and blackface? And then he filed a suit against his family, filed a suit against Deadspin. Deadspin just got sold and they fired everybody. So they're going to completely revamp the entire newsroom, news staff organization. I don't know if the two things are connected. I'm just telling you, these are things that happen. And I know people who follow that story were like,
Did you hear how they did it?
No, do tell.
They gave him a 30-minute heads up, and then they were all locked out of their accounts from in the, you know, that's business accounts.
Seems like a little more than just an acquisition. Yeah. Seems like a little more than just that. Which, you know, I think now the question is going to be on all of your journalistic applications in the future is, have you now or have you ever worked for Deadspin? Oh, man. Oh, I don't know the details of it exactly. I read them, but they're all beyond me. The Marine Corps is apparently raising the level of challenge for qualification on the rifle range for new Marines. It seems like a good thing.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Robert Hur testifies for the House Judiciary Committee this morning about his special counsel report on President Biden's mishandling of classified documents.
They were found in a badly damaged box in the president's Delaware garage, surrounded by household items. But Hur gives this reason for not prosecuting President Biden. At trial, Mr. Biden would likely present himself to a jury, as he did during our interview of him, as a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. Ariel Henry says he will resign as Prime Minister of Haiti.
After fleeing the country while armed gangs run the streets there, he will now turn over authority to a transitional council. This all comes hours after Secretary of State Antony Blinken held an emergency meeting in the Caribbean and pledged millions of dollars to support Haiti.
Fox's Todd Pyro. Consumer inflation in February comes in at 3.2% year over year. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. Bit of a chilly Tuesday morning. 46 degrees right now. Mostly clear skies, though. Pensacola police investigating an officer-involved car crash on Bayou Boulevard last night. This all happened at about 7 p.m. last night near Hyde Park. Witnesses tell Channel 3 a Jeep rolled onto its side as a result of that crash. PPD says there were no life-threatening injuries. Right now, no information on what caused the accident. Well, new details as a homicide investigation continues in Escambia County. The sheriff's office says a male victim in his 30s was found with a gunshot wound to the chest yesterday.
Initially, it was called into EMS as a possible overdose or a cardiac event. When they get there, they notice that there is obviously a gunshot wound to the male.
And that happened at R and Godfrey Streets. That was Sheriff Chip Simmons there. Deputies had actually responded to that scene earlier in the morning when ShotSpotter picked up a gunshot, but at that point, they didn't find anything. A Gulf Breeze woman will spend at least 15 years in prison after being convicted of trafficking in meth. The state attorney's office says 54-year-old Angela Anderson was found guilty in January and sentenced to 30 years in state prison, 15 being the minimum mandatory. Back in January of last year, Pensacola police say they found over 200 grams of meth in the center console of her car after stopping her for an expired registration. Well, executives with the ARC Gateway now working on finding a new home for their adult day training center in Santa Rosa County. For 30 years now, that program has been housed at 6225 Dixie Road in Milton. But the property owners now asking them to move out.
Imagine a facility that has been operating for over three decades, has 6 weeks approximately to uproot, find a temporary location to continue to provide these services to these very special Santa Rosa citizens. And then at the same time, they got to find a new permanent home.
And that from yesterday's Santa Rosa County Commission meeting. According to the News Journal, discussions have taken place with county leaders about the possibility of them using the Baghdad Community Center. A local economist painting a picture of just how much more difficult it is these days to find affordable housing here in Northwest Florida. Dr. Rick Harper tells Channel 3 insurance premiums and interest rates are up. Building costs are also up.
The cost of delivering a new home to the marketplace is 50% higher than it was 3 or 4 years ago.
He also says that about 80% of homes were affordable to families making the median income back in 2020. But as of now, that number has fallen sharply to about 40%. Well, early this morning, four NASA astronauts returned back to Earth.
Dragon splashdown.
SpaceX copy. See the same.
Visual and audio confirmation for splashdown of Dragon Endurance. It has now returned home, and NASA astronaut Jasmine Mogbelli, along with ESA astronaut Andy Mogensen, JAXA astronaut Satoshi Fukawa, and Roscosmos cosmonaut Konstantin Borisov are back on Earth after an approximately 18.5-hour return journey from space.
The SpaceX Dragon capsule splashed down just south of Perdido Key in the Gulf. If you were out before 5 o'clock this morning, you may have seen it streaking through the sky. The Crew 7 astronauts have been aboard the International Space Station since August. 7:35 at News Radio. And let's get a look at our traffic on the fives.
Yes. Highway 98 eastbound into Windhaven Beach. We're seeing our normal morning slowdown, as well as Highway 98 westbound through Tiger Point at that light at Avalon Boulevard, Garcon Point. I-10 eastbound is really slow between Pine Forest and Pensacola Boulevard. And Blue Angel Parkway and Mobile Highway, that intersection is congested in all directions there. This is just our normal morning scene here. Avalon Boulevard southbound headed toward I-10 was showing a little bit of slowdown earlier. And Woodbine Road southbound is backed up to Oak Tree Lane. We had that earlier crash on Pine Forest Road at West Detroit Boulevard, but I'm not really seeing any issues with that. If you do see anything out there on our roadways and you want to report it, you can call or text our traffic tip line. That phone number is 437-1620. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
We are going to be seeing a nice, beautiful day today, starting off on the cooler side, warming up in the afternoon near 69 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 56. For Wednesday, we will have a chance of some isolated showers, high near 72. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 63. Looking beautiful for Thursday with highs in the mid-70s. Stay connected to the Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 46 in Pensacola, also 46 in Gulf Breeze, and still a bit cooler, 39 in Milton. Our next news at 8, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, and dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Porsche has warned profits will decline this year. It now expects an operating return on sales between 15 and 17% in 2024, down from the 18% margin notched last year. In addition, the German luxury carmaker is launching 4 new sports cars in 2024, but gave no other details on the new releases. The company's shares were down by nearly 2% in early trading. Lego said its 2023 revenue increased by 2% up to nearly $9.65 billion, which was in line with expectations. The toy maker said operating profits declined from just over $2.6 billion to just over $2.5 billion, while noting that it had boosted spending on strategic initiatives.
I'm getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, a Pfizer vaccine.
So am I, because I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine. It can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Investing in times like these can be scary if you don't have the right person at the helm of your finances. Armada Advisors will put you on the right path for success. Join Wesley Odom with Armada Advisors to find a better way you can successfully invest your money and enjoy your retirement. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel this morning at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Hey, Pensacola, get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are their dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola. 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Good morning, 740 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Good to have you with us. Nice, bright, sunny day. Good day for a splashdown from the SpaceX Dragon capsule. About three hours ago. Photos and video up on our Facebook page if you want to check that out for yourself. In studio with me now, I have Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, welcome back.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm always doing well when you're around. You did it again, by the way. I just got to tell you that we do our Tuesday interview, and then immediately you have like four news stories on Tuesday in the day. So what are we going to do about this?
It's not intentional. Yeah, what people don't know is you give me tips. And then we go out there and we make all these cases.
That is so. Anyway, I do see that the FDLE is having a press conference today on what they call Operation Kessel Run. It has to do with using the internet to sexually exploit children today in Pensacola. This is an operation involving everybody, but they do this periodically, and every time you do it, you catch people. Every time you catch,
sadly, that is the case. We have a pretty robust operation, ICAC, Internet Crimes Against Children. We're always constantly doing that, and this was a multi-jurisdictional. That's all I'll say about it because I don't want to.
Sure, obviously they're going to have a press conference.
Yeah.
I do like I do appreciate the Star Wars reference to the Kessel Run. The smuggling is kind of the idea in the Millennium Falcon, although I don't know that I want to name an operation that catches them. Anyway, that's too far afield for us.
I didn't name it.
Fair enough. I appreciate that.
Get off my back, man.
before we get into the big instance of the last week, I do want to say I happened to be driving on US 29 a week or two ago, and now that the new ordinance about not standing in the median is in place,
right.
I did happen to see one of your deputies that had gotten out with somebody who was standing in the median on US 29,
right.
And I thought, hey, look, enforcement.
Well, I've been saying for a long time, if there were enforceable ordinances or enforceable laws, then we would enforce those, but in the past, there have been the ordinances or laws that are under constitutional review. And knowing that, it's difficult for us to go out there and put our deputies in that position and put our agency in that position, quite frankly. But when the county commission approved the ordinance that does not allow you to stand in medians under 6 foot, 6 foot and under, we intended to enforce it, and we have been enforcing that. It requires a warning and two light cycles and that sort of thing. So we've been doing that, understandably. But our hope is that ultimately people will stop standing in that median.
If people see it, right? I mean, I know for a lot of there are a lot of infractions that I think people feel reluctant to call in because they feel like it doesn't quite rise to the level of like a 911 or even the non-emergency number, or they don't want to be a pest, or I don't know. But if people see somebody standing in the median in violation, do you want their help? Do you want the report?
Yeah, if they can let us know, because a lot of times people will pick a corner, they'll pick a location, and they'll be there repeatedly.
Right.
So even if it wouldn't be the highest priority call that we get. I mean, right. We're not going to stop and deviate from a domestic violence type call to go to it. But if when they have time, they'll go through there and they'll get out. And as you said, or as you saw, we'll get out there and talk to them and explain to them that there's a law against this. So don't do it.
And that's a call, the non-emergency number, not a 911 call.
Yeah, I would think it's, I mean, unless you're in traffic or someone's life's in danger, it's not a 911 call.
Which is, by the way, everywhere I've lived, I always program into my phone police, sheriff, police, which is not 911, but it's the non-emergency number for PPD or Santa Rosa County Sheriff or whatever, because that way you can call those numbers if something comes up because it's useful.
Right. Yeah. And if you just let us know, where they're doing this, then again, we'll have deputies go out there when they're in between calls, and they can hopefully alleviate it.
You announced last week that you have found some more information and managed to, very good technology use, found enough evidence of a fingerprint in a blood sample from a cold case from, 30 years ago, that you're able to find the person that you think killed Stephen Davis.
Yeah, I got to take you back. 1998, we had a cab driver was taking a break. And then he ended up getting shot a single time, or actually got shot, I think, a couple of times. And that case has been on standby. It's been on hold. There were pieces of information. There was a vague video surveillance showed a guy in a red shirt. There was a bloody smudge. I couldn't even call it a fingerprint because they couldn't determine the ridge and the details that were required for a fingerprint. But they could tell the blood type, but they couldn't match it to an individual. We attached that to the victim's blood. But we couldn't attach the fingerprint to the suspect. So obviously, we have a bloody fingerprint. That's a pretty good clue, right? But we didn't have the technology at the time to figure out who that was. And we had a number of suspects, and they eliminated all of them. So they had no idea who did this. And by they, I mean the investigators back, 26 years ago. Mm-hmm. But then with new technology, the sheriff's office before my time had resubmitted that fingerprint to try to get it evaluated again. And then a couple years later, they reevaluated, submitted again. And now we sent some of our crime scene people and our investigators to this training where they can better get, pull that ridge detail that's necessary. Hmm. And there's also some, with the computerized technology and photography now, you can get a little better with that. So lo and behold, they submitted it again. This time it came back with the individual that, it popped up on
who's already incarcerated elsewhere in Florida.
For some very serious crimes. He wasn't going to get out for a number of years. But there's some closure for the family.
Right.
I had the opportunity to meet with two of the sisters, and one of their main comments was, man, I wish my mother could have seen to live to see justice, lived to see, the answers, why. And it was just a purely random act. Mm. I mean, going back, there were some other things that put this gentleman at the scene, killer, at the scene.
Yeah.
And so, again, we tie all that together, working pretty well with the state attorney's office. And then we got a warrant signed, and obviously we served it on them. And he'll come up here and answer for the charges. Now, I think he's destined to get out like in 2027 or something like that. Hopefully, this will keep him in there forever.
Well, and two things that I think are a credit to your agency that show in this case. Number one is that you've been engaged in these cold case symposiums, so you're really very actively coming back and coming back and coming back to these cases that remain unsolved, these homicides, which you never give up on homicides. And then number two is that you mentioned it, that you had sent your folks to a training,
right,
sharpen the sword kind of stuff. And they brought back with them knowledge gained at the training that allowed them to go back and apply new techniques to this cold case information and produce, a charge against somebody because of that. And both of those components, I think, are important in this case. So, credit to your agency, credit to your leadership for doing that. We're talking to Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, hang on for just a second. Jake has got traffic on the fives.
Okay, if you're on Highway 98 eastbound this morning into Windhaven Beach, we're seeing our normal morning slowdown, as well as Highway 98 westbound through Tiger Point at Avalon Boulevard, Garcon Point. I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Pensacola is looking really slow this morning. Also, the front gate at NES is backed up to Gulf Beach Highway. Avalon Boulevard southbound headed toward I-10 is showing some slowdown. And Woodbine Road southbound backed up to Oak Tree Lane. If you see anything else out there on the roadways, let me know. 437-1620. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jake. Back to Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, you had another comment that you wanted to make about the cold case solution?
Yeah, you mentioned the cold case symposium, which we've had a couple already. And I think it's important to kind of note that what I wanted to do is gather experienced investigators from other areas. And one of those investigators was Ted Chamberlain, who I work with at Pensacola Police Department. Ted Chamberlain is probably noted more for being the investigator with the Jody Buoniano murder, the Black Widow. He wrote a book,
okay,
there's a book
okay.
written about it and all that stuff. So we had the opportunity to bring him in, and he's the one that said, hey, I was looking at this case right here. I think if you resubmit it with the latest technology, why don't we do that again? Now, I'm not saying we wouldn't have done that, but because we have a list of all these cases that we're going to resubmit when the technology comes around. But he said, why don't we put this one at the front of the list, because there's a possibility here. And that's why I had him present at the press conference. And he was also present when we talked to the family, talked to the sister.
That's
so
great.
This is a pretty good
great
opportunity for us.
We also did have an incident. We had a man discovered fatality with a gunshot wound on our street. And this was in, the home or the building is a pending demolition for code enforcement too, or something. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I know we've had 14 calls to there in the last 3 months, disturbances, EMS calls, just a number of different variety of different calls. So we're familiar with the address. This case, we got a call, we actually got a call about 3:30, a shot spotter indication showed that there was a single shot, in that area. So our deputies arrived as we do.
So this
around.
Was a shot spotter.
There was a shot spotter.
Okay.
A couple hours earlier, but we couldn't see anything. We couldn't find anyone. We knocked on doors, couldn't find anything, which happens way more than there's actually someone shot. The overwhelming majority of the time, it's a shot spotter. We get there, and the thought is that someone's shooting in the air, someone's shooting in the ground, target practice, that sort of thing. So in this case, we get there, we couldn't find anything. Well, 4 hours later, allegedly, some of the friends go inside. There's a motorhome parked in front of this lot. And then they get there and they find out this person, they think he's had an overdose. They call EMS. EMS gets there, discover a bullet wound. Then we get the call. So now we're working it obviously as a homicide. That's all I can tell you right now. We've got some leads that they're running down, but we are asking if anyone has information to let us know.
Okay. And that's so the EMS discovered that he had been shot, but then you know, just so all the pieces of the puzzle, then you would, for example, you call the medical examiner would come and confirm that that was the likely cause of death, and or do an autopsy if they're not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to look at the at a body and determine, you know, what could have contributed.
Right.
But yes, ultimately the medical examiner's office is called. They send their investigators out there, and then they handle the autopsy part of it, and then the medical examiner will let us know the cause of death. Because again, you got what appears to be a gunshot wound. You know, you have to find, you know, if there's a bullet projectile still left in the body, and an exit wound, all that kind of stuff is helpful for us, the trajectory, all that stuff. But then you never know what else there might have been. You know, strangulation might have been some other cause of contributing cause of death.
Last thing I wanted to ask you about is I know it hasn't been signed by the governor yet, but the ordinance for camping that would give you the ability to remove somebody from, say, a park or a sidewalk or something like that, or private property, of course. But also, if there's a place to move them to, if there is a publicly designated area that has there's a bunch of parameters on this for camping. Scambia, you know, again, it hasn't been signed yet, but, you know, have you guys had any conversations with the county about this yet? You know, they're probably waiting for it to get signed, but have you had any conversations or, you know, anticipation of how this might look when you're actually involved in the enforcement of this ordinance?
We haven't sat down with it. I mean, as you know, these things are amended up until the last moment.
They really are.
That they're approved. So that was just, last week, I guess, it ended up. But we haven't had a conversation with them. I mentioned earlier that we were enforcing the ordinance that they already passed.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that we intend to enforce this ordinance as well, and working with the county as much as we possibly can. I've been pushing a long time for this dashboard to kind of let our deputies know where, so when we get out with somebody, we can say, hey, it looks like there's room in the rescue mission or this other mission or other home. And so that we can all work together on these things so that whatever actions the county take ends up taking, we're consistent. It's consistent with the law, obviously. And, you know, it's that balancing act. You know, you have to balance the law with humanity, you know, with, okay, you know, no one's going to starve on my watch type of thing. But I'm convinced that the people that are out there are not starving if they don't want to be, you know, to be hungry, I should say. But I have a heart, but I will tell you that if there's an ordinance or there's a state law that will allow us to remove them from the public areas, then we will enforce that. And my hope is that that's our job. Our job is to enforce state law. Other people decide, you know, how many homes, what type of shelters that they have.
Right.
And, you know, my expectation is that they will get on that so that we can have some sort of resolution to this homeless situation.
Fair to say that if this law gets passed and if the county provides the facility that's required by the law for it to be enforced, that it would be, you would find it useful to actually have a place that you could always take people to if you're going to trespass them off of public or private lands because they're camping. That would be useful.
Absolutely. I get complaints and calls every day, and I feel for the residents, and I feel for business owners, and I see that. I also feel for people that may be hungry. I understand there's a mental health issue that needs to be resolved. Again, that's not the sheriff's office responsibility. The sheriff's office responsibility is to enforce the laws. And if there's a law, we will enforce it.
Sheriff Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff, thank you as always for keeping us safe, providing for the public safety, and for spending some time with us every week. I appreciate it.
You bet. Y'all take care.
Jake has got traffic. Oh, no, not yet. Let's we'll come back with that. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, I'm Terrence A. Gross. As many of you know, I am a local board-certified personal injury lawyer, and I have practiced in this community for almost 40 years. Our law firm handles only people that have been injured due to the negligence of another. Join me this Wednesday at 10:30 on Pep Talk as we discuss all aspects of personal injury law.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Pinner Credit Union is here for every move-in day to the perfect home, every trip up the coast in the perfect car, for every business door unlocked, every dollar saved for something special, every dream achieved one goal at a time. We're here because Pinner Credit Union has been a part of this community since 1936, and with affordable lending, flexible accounts, easy access, and smart guidance, we're a perfect fit for the way you bank. Join us at pinner.org. You'll fit right in. Insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Join Travis Thompson with Climatech, a professional air, an American Standard heating and air conditioning independent customer care dealer in the Pensacola area on the Pensacola Expert Panel, Thursday at 9:30. Join in as Travis discusses how you can lower your energy bill and create a healthy, comfortable home. Join him Thursday morning at 9:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Pensacola Right Now with Joe and Austin, 4 to 7 on News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Killing me, Smalls.
We woke you up before with the Blink 182. And now we're waking you up with the Bon Jovi. Sometimes you need to be woken up twice. Maybe you hit snooze. 7:55 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Jake's got our traffic on the fives. Jake?
This traffic report brought to you by ECUA. Highway 98 eastbound getting into Windhaven Beach is seeing our normal morning slowdown, as well as Highway 98 westbound getting through Tiger Point. I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Pensacola Boulevard, very slow. Front gate at NAS Pensacola is backed up to Gulf Beach Highway. Avalon Boulevard southbound headed toward I-10 is seeing some slowdown, as well as Woodbine Road backed up to Oak Tree Lane. If you see anything else out there on our roadways slowing you down, let us know on our traffic tip line. You can call or text 437-1620. ECUA Bulk Waste Service is now call for pickup. Call by 2 p.m. the day before your service day. Learn more at ecua.fl.gov. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
Oh, I saw something. We were in Gulf Shores over the weekend biking, and I saw something I had never seen before. One neighborhood had these signs that said that at this location, you could leave your non-containered waste, I think is what they called it, which would be like your bulk waste. And that between is like between 4 and 8 on Wednesdays or the second day of the month. I don't remember the details. But I thought it was a really nice sort of way to allow people to do that that I had never seen a neighborhood do before. Now, you still got to get it from, you know, if it's a sofa, you got to get it from your house to the location. But still, I just thought that was an interesting, different approach to solving that problem rather than having the neighbors put it out by the curbside and then having to call ECUA for it. 7:57, News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
President Biden calling on Congress to work with his administration to lower health care costs. He was in New Hampshire yesterday. The president outlined his health care agenda, which included expanding the Affordable Care Act and capping out-of-pocket drug costs. Gas prices have been on the rise. Oil analysts are saying be prepared to be hit even harder. The national average up to $3.39 today, according to AAA. And a U.S. Navy seaman second class from Michigan who was on the USS Oklahoma at Pearl Harbor when it was attacked in 1941 has now been identified. Raymond Boynton was just 19 when that attack occurred, and I'm just always astonished they're able to identify people even to this day.
Yeah, and it's also kind of a reminder. We were talking the other day about the pillaging of these sunken vessels because the steel is non-irradiated steel, and that's useful in the medical equipment, and, you know, that people are basically salvaging these sunken vessels, but in the process from World War II, disturbing the grave sites. And that's a problem, you know, ethically, that you're disturbing the grave sites, but also because, you know, these are bodies and we might be able to identify them later. And just, you know, it's a reminder of also like the fingerprint, like how technology can change and allow us to, you know, figure this stuff out so many years later. It's amazing the diligence of the folks who do all that investigating, whether it's, you know, people who died in, you know, North Korea or Vietnam or, you know, I mean, just I'm with you, David. I appreciate it. 7:59 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Oh, a clarification apparently from the Vatican. Remember Pope Francis got in a little bit of criticism for saying what people thought he was saying was that the Ukraine ought to surrender to Russia by waving the white flag. What he apparently was saying was not that, but just that it takes courage to be willing to consider that, or courage to be willing when you're in a war to consider the possibility of quitting the war. I'm not quite sure which way he said it, but some people, they kind of interpret the Catholic Church as being pacifist, but of course the Catholic Church invented just war theory doctrine.
Stream us at newsradio923.com. Newsradio 92.3 WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.